Welcome to High Velocity Radio. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Stone. How are you feeling today?
I'm doing well. I am a tummy full of strawberries and cream. I watched Wimbledon, including the finals match yesterday. I know you're a tennis guy. Were you watching Wimbledon over the weekend?
I used to be a tennis guy. I watched maybe one game of the entire 2 weeks.
Oh, man, I was bawling yesterday when Murray was talking to the crowd. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye.
Rooting for him when I saw he finally made it to the finals. I wanted him to win, but didn't happen.
You were too busy recreating your own version of the famed film Deliverance.
That's right. Went whitewater rafting in Tennessee.
That's right in your wheelhouse, man.
Exactly. It was a lot of fun.
Do you have any lessons learned from that experience that you're willing to share with our listeners?
Choose your guides wisely. The guide can influence the outcome of the trip. Our guy was like a little... Rules didn't apply to him. Kind of reminded me of you a little bit. He had his own set of rules.
All right. Well, what do you say we change the tone and try to get a little more professional counsel than what you have to offer this morning?
A good plan.
Well, a little bit later in the program on High Velocity this morning, we are going to hear from Frank Paterno with Inteliverse and John Fowler with Facility Supply Group. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the president and CEO, the Grand Poobah, Lee, with Great Ridge Company, Miss Linda Hughes. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Doing well. We are delighted to have you. Give us a little bit of an overview, if you would, about Great Ridge. What are you guys out there doing for folks?
What Great Ridge does is we're a consulting company, and the main thing we do is try to help companies grow. That's really our focus. That's why I started the company. And what we want to do is help people integrate operations and IT together to make sure they're leveraging their investments.
And so what compelled you to get in that line of work? Early in your childhood, you said, this is what I'm going to do.
I love IT.
Well, funny enough, I actually got started because of watching cartoons, and they had the little guy in front of the big bank of flashing lights, and I thought that was really cool. And that's actually a true story. That's how I got started in IT. But after that, worked for Coca-Cola and then went to the North Highland Company, which is a consulting company, ran their technology practice for quite a while, and then went to AIG and had a little bit of bad timing on my move to AIG. Y'all might have heard they had a few issues. And so then after that, I decided to start my own company.
Now, part of starting your own company, I see, is you wrote a book.
I did. I've just written a book. It actually will be available August 1st, and it's called The CEO's Secrets to IT Success.
Are you going to share any of those, or are you just going to tell us the name of the
book?
You've
got to
buy the book.
That's exactly right. No. in the book, I actually share quite a few secrets. Probably the biggest thing that I cover that might be of interest is a lot of people have difficulty communicating with their IT group. The IT group has their own language, has their own set of things that they do. And so one of the things that I cover, I have a whole chapter devoted to the secrets that you might not know about IT. And so really trying to help you understand some of the terminology and what it means in business terms.
So recruiting and hiring IT folks, that's got to be a unique challenge. What counsel, if any, do you have to offer in that regard?
So the main thing that I cover in the book has to do with hiring your CIO, because that's really generally who the CEO interacts with. And I've actually got an entire chart of characteristics to think about. But one of the most important is how strategic do you need your CIO to be versus how operational. So are you dealing with a lot of strategic issues, or do you just need someone to come run the ship, everything is going fine? So that's one of the most important things. I've got a list of probably 15 characteristics to look through, and I explain each of them and tell you how to figure out which one will fit your business.
Now, is there any characteristic that's a don't? Like if they have this characteristics, this is not your person?
My biggest don't, I would say, is if they talk to you with a lot of jargon, a lot of abbreviations, a lot of three-letter acronyms, those sorts of things, they're probably not going to be who you need because you're going to continue to have communication issues.
Now, it strikes me as a potentially very expensive part of the business, investing in personnel like a CIO, but also just IT infrastructure. Is that the case? And if so, are there some rule of thumb disciplines that that a business should follow in terms of percentages or something like that?
So IT is a large expense. For a lot of companies that I've worked for, as well as ones I've consulted to, IT can be the highest component of their just cost of goods, you know, their soul, what it takes to really run their business. But there are rules of thumbs that there are different organizations out there that run benchmarks One organization is Gartner. Another one is Forrester. And they run benchmarks. That's what they do for a living and can give you percentages because they actually vary by industry. So if you think about some industries go to market purely over the internet, well, obviously their IT cost is going to be higher than someone who, say, manufactures fish, takes whole fish and cuts it into fillets. Their IT cost will be a lower percentage. So it really varies by industry, but there are some good sources out there for that.
We pay our guys with beer.
You know, I've also found that to be a high motivator for most IT people.
Beer and Red Bull?
Is that yeah. Red Bull during the day, beer at night when all the important stuff is going on with IT.
Now, is this book only for CEOs or is there anybody else in the organization that it's good for?
It's actually good for anyone in the organization, particularly anyone in the C-suite could gain value out of it because it really is about trying to interpret all the things that IT does in a non-technical manner. So even at the lower levels of the organization, it would be of value.
Now, is there a sweet spot for Great Ridge, a certain type of industry or client that is really in your wheelhouse?
I would say the sweet spot really is companies who are at some sort of tipping point and they're trying to grow, but something is holding them back and they can't quite figure out what it is. That's where Great Ridge can really help. We come in, we can look at the business side of the house, the operations, the processes being done, as well as their IT and make sure everything is working together to grow the business. So there's no particular industry, no particular size. We are targeting small to medium businesses, although we've done quite a bit of work for even like the Fortune 100. So pretty much any business we've got experience working with, a lot of different kinds.
Now, we recently did some work with the Women in Technology. Now, being a woman in technology, can you share some of your experiences in that area? Because what we were told that there's just, you know, it's like 1 out of 10, around that, 2 out of 10, the women in technology.
Yeah, so I've obviously been a woman in technology my whole career, but there are less women. The higher you get in the ranks, the more the women fall out, and that actually is an IT phenomenon, but I would say it also is true of most professions. But in the IT world, you know, my experience really was that I've always been able to communicate with a lot of different people and build relationships with people. And so I didn't face, I don't believe, a lot of, you know, female versus male kinds of issues. I just kind of went in and did the job and just kept going, and it all worked out for me.
Did you have mentors?
I did have mentors. I've had quite a few mentors. One was a woman that I worked for at Coca-Cola. She was a terrific mentor, came along at just the right point in my career when I was kind of transitioning from being a more technically focused person to business focused, but still within IT. And then even after that, consulting, the founder of North Highland has been a mentor to me for years. So quite a few different mentors.
How do you go to market? Because, I mean, are you picking up the phone and calling people and saying, I can really help you with this stuff?
This is Linda Hughes.
Yeah.
You know who you're talking to?
No, I mean, it's got to be a little bit tough, right?
It is a little bit, but I have been in town for quite a few years. The majority of my business is referrals. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we're working on right now is actually kind of getting past that referral and getting into some other things. So I'm trying to use social media a lot, which I'm still a novice at, I will admit, but I'm trying to do better. And to be honest, the book is a way that I think will help. I think I can showcase some of the expertise of mine specifically and therefore the companies and help people know who we are and that we're out there ready to help.
Now, well, and it's a non-issue now. She's been on High Velocity.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. I'm famous.
Now, do you find that social media is, it's people at the executive level, are they embracing it to kind of expand their business? Because it typically those kind of things bubble up from like the lower levels higher.
Right.
You don't see the CEOs kind of leading the charge into social media.
And that's true. And that's where I think I've had some struggles. But one of the things that I've been you think about it a couple different ways. One is depending upon the size of company. Some CEOs are out there on Twitter, looking around on Facebook because they're smaller companies. They're much more engaged at that level. But the other thing is you're getting to the influencers. So you may not get to the buyer of your services, but you're getting to the influencers and they can learn more about you. They can talk to the CEOs and the other C-level executives about what you do. And everybody now is at least researching. Even if the CEO doesn't do it themselves, they're telling the guy down the hall, hey, go research this person, make sure they're not a total bozo before we bring them in here.
But I got to imagine it's a little bit tricky, right, particularly in your arena because you've got to populate these social media platforms with thought leadership and resources. You can't just
you
jump
can't
out
have
there
a buy
say,
one get one free.
That's right, exactly right.
A Groupon.
I do have some coupons, but not Groupons. You're right. No, that is true. It is challenging when you're in a services business and you're B2B. If you're B2C, you know, you want to be out there. You want to be talking about the, you know, your latest sandwich creation or whatever it is that you do. But in the B2B world, it really is more about thought leadership. It's more about helping people, give them a reason to pick up the phone and say, hey, that sounds like something I might could use here. So it's about talking about a lot of different subjects.
Now, how has it been different for you? You've worked for large firms, you've worked for large consulting practices, but now to kind of run your own show here, how's that change?
Oh, it's been easy. No, it has not. it has really been interesting. It's all about scaling down. And one of the good things, and I actually, because when I joined North Highland, they were a small consulting company. And so I was actually there through the growth. And so it's sort of been like doing that in reverse, remembering what we did in the early days so that I can continue to leverage that, build on it, modernize it, but then be able to grow into the larger company. So one of the probably most challenging things for me has really been I want a lot of infrastructure that it doesn't make sense to have yet. But I know why I need it, but it just doesn't make
right.
sense. So, you know, that's sort of hard to do.
It's like a like to have, but it's not a need to
it's
have.
It's not right? a must. Right. right. Exactly. Yeah.
So what is that like to have?
Oh, the like
a fancy chair.
Well, yeah, you know, the office on the 20th floor. No, the probably the biggest like to have for me really is more infrastructure within the back office. So someone who can handle all of the HR things that need to be handled. You know, someone who can focus on technology all the time. And I just don't need that yet. And I don't know that I ever will. I don't want to be the next, you know, humongous consulting company. So really just not realizing I'm going to have to make do with what I've got. I've found some very good help. Multi-talented. I like people who can do two or three things at the same time. And those are the kind of people that I think really help a company when they're first growing.
So let's talk about this book a little bit more, the process. How long did it take you? Did you get some help? Did you get some mentoring on that? Did you write a check and someone else wrote it
yeah.
for you?
I'm too cheap to write a check. No. So I've kind of thought about writing a book for a long time. And I guess it was November or so, I was introduced to Bonnie Daniker by Sandy Hoffman. Sandy is part of WIT and they co-wrote the book Climb, which is about female executives.
Oh, yeah. I remember seeing that book
right.
when I went to the conference.
Yeah.
Right. So I was talking with Sandy and I said, I think I've got a book in me. She goes, well, you need to talk to Bonnie. And so I contacted Bonnie. And what she does is she really sort of project manages you through the process. So she helps you. She keeps you from, you know, I have a interesting sense of humor. And sometimes she's like, that is great in person, but on paper, it really didn't come across. And so, okay, I'll edit that. But it took me, I actually started the book and I'm told I'm on a much faster path than most. So I first started thinking about the book over Thanksgiving last year. I wrote 90% of it the week between Christmas and New Year's, and then have been going through the process of edits and getting it tight, you know, the page layout and the dust cover and all of those cute and fun little things, which have taken quite a while. For me, it's taken, you know, I'm like, writing was supposed to be hard, but that was the easy part. The harder part is getting through the process.
You feel like you could just knock it out in a weekend, right? It's your stuff.
Exactly. What's the hold up here? But no, Bonnie has been great, as well as a lot of the other people who she's brought in to help me. They've done a wonderful job. Very thankful for all their help.
Now, are most of your clients here in town, or are they all over the country, world?
Predominantly in the U.S. I would say probably 80% of them here in Atlanta, just because that's, you know, where I'm from. It's where I've focused the most. But I have had clients in other parts of the U.S. and a couple of international ones since I started the company.
Now, did you decide to also do an ebook as well? Did you just go with hard copy, or what did you decide to
do? There will be an ebook as well. It's going to come out probably a couple of months after, just because of the timing of getting everything done. And I need to make a little bit of money to pay for the ebooks. I got to sell some of the other one first. No. But yeah, so we're going to have an ebook as well available in all the formats.
So you decided to self-publish?
Yes, I did. We actually talked with some other publishers, and believe it or not, their process was going to be longer. And I said, I do not have 2 years to go through this process. I said, we'll just self-publish. So
that's
I did it that way.
We interview a lot of lawyers and a lot of authors, and that's...
You put those guys in the same
exactly.
bucket for some reason.
I don't know why.
There's something there.
I'll have to talk to my therapist about the reason for that. But the authors say that that's one of their biggest reasons of they're choosing not to conventionally publish, but they're choosing to either either e-publish or to self-publish because they can get it out in half the time or even less.
Yeah, we talked to, I won't name the publishing house, but we pitched the book to them. They said they were very interested, and they thought in about 2 years we could have it done.
Right.
And
it's like, yeah, jump on that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wrote it in a week. Let's see. Okay. Not technically, I didn't write it in a week. I did have to change some things from the first version. But.
Well, before we let you go, let's make sure that folks know how to get their hands on this book as it comes out, and let's make sure they have your contact information so they can have a substantive conversation with you about the services that you provide.
Okay, so the way to best way to contact me is my email, which is my first name, Linda.Hughes, H-U-G-H-E-S, at greatridgecompany.com, all spelled out. And information about the book, of course, there'll be a way to get there from my website. The website for the book is actually demystifyingitforexecutives.com. And the reason for that, of course, is my whole premise for writing the book is to try to make IT not this mystery no one understands, but something people can actually leverage in their business.
And your company's website?
The company website is greatridgecompany.com.
What a fantastic mission, demystifying IT. Yeah, I'm all for it, and I will be your ultimate test.
Okay, great.
If it demystifies for me, you got a bestseller.
Okay. That'll be a good endorsement for the second edition.
Yeah, yeah,
no
exactly.
Kidding. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. How about hanging out with us for a little bit while we visit with our next guest?
I'd love to. That'd be great. Thank you.
All right. Well, Lee, next up on High Velocity Radio, we have a gentleman from Intelliverse, Vice President of Marketing, Mr. Frank Paterno. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks. Good morning, everybody.
Well, we're glad to have you and very impressed with the logo wear.
Thank you.
You know, it's not uncommon for guests who have had a good time here to send us logo wear, all kinds
I
of
see.
Swag. I'm just yeah. throwing that out there.
Linda, you got a nice shirt. I think they want a great shirt.
I got a pin.
Now, we prefer the chefs, actually, so don't worry about it.
That's why. That's the only reason we have a restaurant show.
It's for lunch.
Great.
So tell us a little bit about Intelliverse.
Yeah, sure. Well, actually, very similar to what Linda does, but we kind of take it external. What we do is provide cloud-based communications for businesses, mostly small and medium to small enterprise companies. So what we try to do is take the mystery out of communications technology and help businesses communicate better with their customers and help them let their customers communicate better with them. So it's another world of a lot of acronyms and, you know, fancy jargon. And it's we joke, but we could probably have a 15-minute conversation all with acronyms and understand each other just fine. Linda and I probably could. But what we try to do is it's funny when I laughed when you said, Linda, about recognizing a good CIO by them not using acronyms when they talk to you. We try to do the exact same thing. So we challenge each other in our marketing materials or when we're talking to our customers. None of those acronyms. That's why they would work with us, is so that we know the acronyms, you know the business problems you're having, and we try to be the bridge between those two.
Now, Atlanta, is this just because you like grits? Because I got to say, I don't think Atlanta's not really known as a technology hub, is it, or is it?
Actually, it is. You know, it's more than Gone with the Wind and grits. You've got a lot of big companies that came here in the late 90s and the early 2000s. I mean, grew up in New York. The Olympics happened in 96. It was a big PR for Atlanta. It kind of opened your eyes to, oh, hey, there's this little town down there in the south. Let me go check it out. And a lot of people did that, and a lot of companies did that. And, you know, once you got down here and you realized, well, I'm making a pretty good salary, the cost of living's not too bad, you know, people started to have a little bit of residual income. And what I think happened, you know, over the last 15, 16 years is that then a lot of people left those big companies and went and started their own companies. And Linda, you're a perfect example of that. And lots of good ideas and lots of good technology started up down here. I mean, you think about San Francisco as technology. You think about maybe even New York. Atlanta actually consistently wins America's most wired city. So we have the most internet connectivity.
Yep. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, hopefully we still will today after the threat of this virus. But we win that all the time. We just got named the number two most socially connected city. You know, Facebook and Twitter and things like that. Men's Health named us that, just behind D.C.
Right, but we're good users of that stuff, but are we good developers of that stuff?
Yeah. So there's a lot of those kinds of companies down here. The environment is good for it. You know, when you've got a decent cost of living and you've got a lot of talent, it's a good lab environment for people to try out entrepreneurial ideas on you know, how to make these technologies more ingrained in people. I think that's what Atlanta has, is not just the technology, but trying to keep the technology real and applications of technology, consulting companies on how companies can use technology. You know, that seems to be our niche. We also are, it's a really great city to get in and out of. I mean, we've got the world's right. busiest airport now,
sure.
Which could be a good and a bad thing. It's a great thing when you're coming home from a trade show in Vegas and, you know, you're home and everybody else has to take
another plane,
40-minute flight right. somewhere.
Well, I'll tell you, my wife travels a lot and she says that our, you know, people complain about our airport, but in her experience, security and all that moves much better in Atlanta airport than it does in most of the cities she flies to.
Yeah, I agree. I think.
Now, you mentioned trade shows. Do you guys do a lot of trade shows?
We do. We used to do more than we did. Things have become a lot more social and online. We've done some virtual trade shows lately. But we do still feel that the best way to talk about the technology is to get in front of people and get what we do. If we're going to go to a technology trade show, it's to learn and it's to educate ourselves. When we go to meet customers, we're going to restaurant trade shows and we're going to call center trade shows, and we often...
So there's like, you have a booth at a call center trade show.
Mm-hmm.
There's a call center trade show.
Oh, yeah, we
there's
just got back.
A trade show for everything.
I just got back
like
from that one.
What's in the booths of a call center trade show?
Telephones.
Believe it or not.
They have people in cubicles.
There's cubicle furniture there. There's a lot of companies doing what we do in and
but
around.
But not as well. Let's be clear
not
about
as well,
that.
Not
this
as well.
We're talking about Intelliverse.
That's right. But really, in the call center world, it's very similar for a lot of the industries we deal with. But in the call center world, what you're dealing with lately is not just putting technology in so that you could press 1 to hear your balance or press 2 to talk to somebody or press 3 if you want Spanish. I mean, that's, you know, 20 years ago. Everybody could do that. What is going on in a lot of these worlds now is, you know, how do we not alienate your customers with this technology? Now, we know... Cost-wise, you can't have a live person answer every single call.
That's the starting point these days, is just how do we not piss them off?
It really is. I mean, here's a great example. You know, thank you for calling. Please visit our website. I just called you.
Right. If I wanted to visit your website, I would have looked on to it. I know about your website.
I mean, exactly. Number two, our menu. I know your menu options. I know they have changed. You don't have to
tell
me that.
How often do they change? Because they seem to change quite a bit.
All the time. I mean, it's so much. We've just avoided 15 seconds, you know. And there's a lot of things you could do. You know, if it's a customer and you recognize their phone number, you know, hey, good morning, Stone. You know,
that's cool.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Wow.
That would knock me out of my chair.
Right, if that happened.
You know, the whole idea
I just press 0 all the time until somebody picks up. 0000.
Here's another thing. Put the 0 back in. We lived for many years where people took the 0 out. That just makes for angry customers. Put the 0 in, and it's the job of companies like us to give customers another, you know, entice them to press 1, 2, or 3 because you've got good options. If they're pressing 0 when we look at our reports and there's a lot of 0, we didn't do our job. It's not your fault as the caller that you wanted to press 0.
What are other little tricks to get me to a human?
Well, I mean, it is trying them.
What, star, pound? What is the code? There's some secret code that gets me right to a human, isn't there?
Well, any customer you deal with us, it's a 0. That we're gonna, you know, really, really encourage them to say, you know, you've got to give that 0 option. But the biggest thing is, don't remind the caller that they're talking to a computer. No one wants to talk to a computer. So as much as you can humanize the experience as possible. I mean, I laughed and mentioned, you know, if you know who they are, say their name. That's a huge, I mean, you're
that's disarming. Boom.
Right.
I'm like happier right there if you did that.
Your threshold goes right down. You're like, oh, I'm a little bit more happy here.
So now you mentioned call centers. Is that the sweet spot for your business or are there other aspects?
Like, yeah,
do you
do
voicemail or do you do all kinds of like corporate-y,
we do
telephone stuff?
So we've been around for 28 years. So we've done a lot of communications technology in the early years and still to today. Voicemail, voice messaging was a big deal. Now, of course, that voicemail is mixed with faxes and sent to email and transcoded or translated into text and all sorts
of
things.
How's your transcription? Do you do transcription of emails?
We do. There's two ways to do it. You can transcribe voicemails to email. So let's say you just wanted a quick text of, you know, maybe the first beginning of your voicemail. Oh, well, that's cool. Or the other way. We had a product out many, many years ago in Atlanta. It was called Orchestrate. And it was one of the first read your email or email by phone. So you would get an email and, you know, maybe you were driving or whatever was the idea, and it would actually read it to you in that old computer voice of 1999. It was a brilliant product. It was a little bit ahead of its time, but it was a great R&D project. And so we've taken a lot of those ideas and disassembled them and put them back now into real-world applications. So exactly, you know, voicemail going to email, email going to voicemail could be very useful. One that's really useful is fax mail going to email. I'm a really good technologist. I'm terrible with copiers and fax machines. They don't like me. I don't like them. But if somebody ever needs to send me a fax, it happens once a month or so. You know, they just fax it to the same work number that I have. And the
number knows it's a fax and then kind of routes it to where it has to go.
Absolutely. It pops up in my email. There it is. You know, that's JPEG, cool. TIFF file, print it out and, you know, save it, whatever.
So has the move to mobile that we see so many individuals and businesses making, has that had an impact on your business and your service suite?
Huge. Two ways. One, we have to really account for the fact that most of the customers that are calling in to any of the applications that we provide are going to be mobile and or more and more have smartphones. So, you know, for mobile, when you're doing things that especially have like speech recognition, you have to account for the fact that there's going to be a lot of background noise. You're going to have different kinds of tolerances. So, again, you don't want to make the customer angry. The worst thing is, you know, you're calling in from your cell phone and all of a sudden, you know, the automated system heard the train in the background and said, "I'm sorry, I didn't get that." Well, I didn't say anything. What didn't you get? So there's definitely some tweaks you have to do for that. The second thing is for the people on the business side, you know, who run these applications, they need to run them now mobily. So if you've got even someone with a small, medium business, and, you know, we have a blizzard in Atlanta, which does happen for everybody out there in radio land. We do have blizzards here. We have to close the office. You know, you can, from your mobile phone or from your smartphone, should be able to go in and make that change into your communications system so that people calling in now either A, know that the office is closed, or even better, B, all of the calls coming into your office now got routed to your mobile phone or everybody else's mobile phones. It's really taken the idea of everybody sitting in one floor, 100 people all on one floor, and broken it up. Which really works well for us, because when you go back to this idea of cloud-based, cloud-based just means you don't have a big piece of equipment sitting in your office that's doing all this. It's all in the network. It's all in things like Hotmail and all, we're one of the first cloud-based services. Salesforce.com is a cloud-based service. So apply that now to technology, and you're sitting there with your mobile phone. Okay, that's your device. Everything else is in the cloud. It's an Intelliverse's network. You don't have to have a big... I'm going to try to avoid to use PBX or IVR or ACD phone system sitting anywhere.
Now, is there the industries that you work in? Is it across the board, or do you like specialize in government, or you specialize in retail or food, or do you have a sweet spot?
We do. It's funny. Did you do a little research?
Throwing random things out here.
Retail industry is a huge industry for us, because when you think about the demographic of having 1,000 or 2,000 locations all around the country that all need to be treated in some way, that's a pretty large organization. But each individual store is small. They got 2-3 phone lines, you know, 5-6 employees maybe. So that is a huge sweet spot for us, because you're not going to want to pay to put equipment in 1,000 sites. So that screams of a cloud-based service. Restaurants for the exact same reason. We do a lot of work with the government as well. They need a lot of help translating technology.
Really? Hard to believe. Now, in those cases, do you go to restaurant trade shows, or you go to, you know, those kind of industry? Like,
we do.
Specific, like, manufacturing trade shows?
Absolutely.
And that's where you can kind of show your wares to all them?
Yes. The NRA, which is the National Restaurant Association, yeah. has an awesome show in Chicago, and it's great because, you know, when you go to all these technology trade shows, it's really nice to go to the one where you could sample the latest pizza and wine, and it makes it a little bit more fun.
Sample your phone solutions.
Yep. Come listen to how great we are.
Well, we've talked a lot about external applications, but this strikes me as something for large organizations that they would want to jump on for their internal communications. But I was also thinking, even for a small business like us, Lee, how cool would it be if this afternoon we could get on our system or plug into their system through our mobile and say, "Hey, we just had Frank Paterno on the show earlier this morning. check it out. We got it posted on the is that doable yet?
Yeah, you hit two really important trends.
You see there, Lee?
Two in one question.
In one question.
That's impressive.
I'm winning.
The first is the use of outbound services. So a lot of traditionally what we've talked about is customers calling into the business. Now, you know, the technology's there, and you just have to put a little business intelligence behind it, too. When do you want to reach out to your customers? That's a great example to say, hey, let me reach out to them. But now let's get even smarter. Let's say you had people registered to get this information. Did they prefer a text? Did they prefer an email? Did they prefer a live call? Uh-huh. You know, let's give them what they want. So that is absolutely doable. Let's take it another step now, and this is not as much fun to talk about, but there has been a huge rise in the need for emergency notification systems, everything from school campuses to big sports organizations. Whenever you're going to have a lot of people all together in one place, you're going to have a threat of something, and then you have a lot of people that you need to communicate with very, very quickly. So systems like this can be really helpful because all the programming is done beforehand. You know, if there is, God forbid, a disaster, that's not the time you want to go be looking for everybody's cell phone to find out if they're okay. That's the time you want to hit a button or make a call and press, you know, one, and instantly 1,000 people get called. Fortunately, those applications don't have to get used a lot, but it is peace of mind for everyone.
Right, I would think, because I know my kid's school does that. Like, if there's some, like, a school closing, they'll send a text to all of the parents or whatever and say, like, oh, school, or we're having early release or whatever.
Absolutely. And also, take that example back to your restaurant. We do an application that's pretty interesting. We've done it for quite a while now. We call it internally the bad beef hotline. And so let's say there's a lot of tomatoes that goes bad and it comes from distributor 36 that handles the Southeast region and it only affects brands 1 and 2 within this large organization. Again, not the time you want to be go looking up the store managers for all the affected. You want to just be able to go in and say, distribution center 36, brands 1 and 2, start. And it'll call them. It'll make sure, you know, did you get this message? Who are you? You also have a great report then of who got the message, what they did with the bad goods or whatever. That's an application I keep my eye on. It helps me pick where I want to go eat that week.
So. I'm so glad this wasn't prolific, or maybe it didn't even exist when I was a kid, because we'll get a voicemail on our home phone if they show that our kid wasn't at school.
Oh, yeah. There's some not cool things here. It really raises accountability. I mean, another example, we had we do a lot of work with apartment complexes, apartment communities, and you know, if you live in one of those and your toilet gets overflowing or something, you call the emergency maintenance, and you know, we've all done it. You often don't get a call back. Well, one of the big companies in the country had a very big problem with this. So if the maintenance person did not pick up that message and call you back, it would escalate to their cohort or their co-maintenance person. If they didn't answer, it would go to the property manager. If they didn't answer, it would go to the regional manager, all the way up to the CEO of the company, which this was a pretty large company. So internally, needless to say, Intelliverse was not a popular word within that company, but it did improve significantly their response time, which is ultimately what they needed for their customers, who are their residents.
So is it possible that a next generation version of this thing, or again, maybe it already exists, that's the way the rest of this conversation has gone, that something mechanical could actually place the call and say, hey, I'm not working well? Is that in your purview at all?
In terms of, we've got it, Linda could probably talk to it more, systems definitely can dial out and say, you know, hey, we had it a little bit ago, it got too hot in a data center, you know, the city of Atlanta decided to cut off some water. Systems dialed out and, you know, said, hey, it's getting hot in here. What's going on? So that part exists. The next part about it really gets into some of this creepy artificial intelligence, which is, you know, fortunately for now, for all of us, I think the humans still have to be behind the technology. And that's what we try to keep in mind, is that this is great to have all these automated things that can happen, but you still need a human there to decide, okay, let's call those customers. Let's do this marketing to those customers. Because if you don't have that, then you really are talking to a computer, and there are companies that do that automate everything, and unfortunately or fortunately for the ones that don't do it, the customers can tell the difference, and they don't like that. You know, you don't like when a computer is deciding your fate with a company.
So when you're working with an organization, when you first start, you're also providing counsel, expertise on what they should buy, if anything, how to configure it. It's not just a menu of pick the top three things that you want.
Exactly, and that's our sweet spot, or that is our differentiator. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got the network to be able to scale. So if you normally take 500 calls a day and all of a sudden one day you take 3,000, that's what we do. We're prepared for that anytime, any day. We have all the equipment that you don't need. But that's sort of the table stakes for us. You know, what's the differentiator is that we're going to sit down, and we've worked in the restaurant industry, so we know the problems that restaurants have. We work in the retail industry, so that when we sit down with you as a new customer in one of those verticals, we're going to have a lot of ideas to share and a lot of best practices and a lot of, you know, do's and don'ts. I mean, there's a lot of don'ts, a lot of things that we haven't done right the first time that, you know, hopefully we can share.
So you have best practices from other people, and then that way I'm always getting kind of the best knowledge that's out there.
Absolutely, yes.
So how can our listeners reach out and learn more?
A bunch of different ways. Easiest way, our website, Intelliverse, is I-N-T-E-L-L-I, like intelligent, verse, V-E-R-S-E, intelliverse.com. You could also find us on LinkedIn or Twitter or YouTube. We have some interesting videos out there. It's confusing stuff to talk about. So the advent of videos and visual really has helped us communicate to people wanting to learn. So there's some good videos out on YouTube under the Intelliverse channel. You could find me, Frank Paterno. I won't spare, you know, take you through spelling all that, but it is like the late coach, the last name, frank.paterno at intelliverse.com. But easy enough, you could find me off the website.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
How about hanging with us while we visit with our last guest?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. Well, Lee, it's the moment we've all been waiting for.
That's right. John Fowler's in the house.
That's right. The headliner, John Fowler, with the Facility Supply Group. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good. And you've been so patient. I've seen you nod. I think
did you write any notes, there, John? You learn something?
I'm actually loving to know that these guys and gals are really doing some things that are just phenomenal in the technology world to help businesses like mine.
Now, something interesting happened with your company. You merged. There's a big merger in your space.
We
did. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. We were fortunate enough to merge with, we actually, three companies came together to form a fourth company, Facility Supply Group, my company, Eastern Janitorial, one of my partner's companies, and Preferred Building Services came together to form a company called Preferred Services Group. And Preferred Service Group is a diversified business that will allow Fortune 500 companies and business-to-business entities janitorial services, facility services, anything to do with the facility solutions of a building.
Now, what was that process like, putting three companies together? That must have been
just a barrel of laughs.
You did that over cocktails one night? Yeah, just a spur of the moment. Hey, why don't we all three merge? Yeah, good idea.
Well, I wish it was that easy, but it was actually very, very difficult, and we're still going through it. We're going through some growing merger pains, but they're all positive, very positive. One of the things, we were fortunate enough to all kind of do business together for the last 4 or 5 years. So the opportunity for the companies to come together was great timing, given the fact that in this economy, a lot of companies are really hurting. But we were fortunate, all three of us, to not any of us to be hurting,
right,
but felt a strategic opportunity to come together and to develop Preferred Service Group.
Now, how are you going to deal with the culture of each of the companies? That seems to be a challenge whenever any companies merge.
And wonderful question. One of the cultural opportunities that we have. Yeah,
well, part of it is the framing.
Exactly.
Well, we're all somewhat diverse culturally, so and it makes it even, I think, a richer environment. My background, African American, business owner. Frank Hernandez is Latino, mm-hmm. and Brad Wiener is Caucasian. We can bring together all of the opportunities culturally to help any business grow in any form or fashion and to save money and to identify the strengths and weaknesses that we all have and to actually build on those opportunities.
got all the bases covered. All you need is a gay communist.
Okay. Maybe not. I don't want to touch that one.
So exactly what are these services? What are you out there doing for people?
We do, we case in point, XYZ company needs to have an internal partner to come in and look at their infrastructure and say, okay, janitorial services need to be, you know, into an area that is not ours. We do not need to focus our time on janitorial services. We have a business to run, and it does not include janitorial. So we would come in, not only look at the janitorial services, but the supplies that they're using, the light bulbs, the fixtures for the bathroom. We will come in and do a site needs analysis for the company. We will make the recommendations as to what we feel they could employ in order to save money, to save energy, to help the environment. 100% of our opportunities and solutions are green and environmentally friendly. So one of the things we would do is help them control their cost of their internal infrastructure by taking those components, putting them under one umbrella, and we would supply those solutions for them.
Now, if I had a company that maybe wasn't as environmentally friendly as I'd like, by outsourcing this job to you guys, you can kind of get me up and running, right? Because this is all you guys do.
Correct. Those services we would, and one of the things is just in our DNA, we will go into a washroom and we will look and see, you know, what type of paper towels are you using? What type of soap systems are you using? Are you using electronic hand dryers? Hand dryers may have a negative effect on the carbon footprint or the energy consumption in that environment. So we would make recommendations for something that would be more economically friendly as well as more environmentally friendly. That may be hand towels that automatically release one at a time or something like that. We would employ green cleaning. And what does that mean? That is actually trying to employ more of the cleaning during the day so that the night does not keep the lighting on in the building, so that the employees could have their chance of having a clean environment, but bringing those times and reducing and compressing that time frame so it's more efficient time of day to operate the building.
So the building saves energy by not having to keep everything going.
That is correct.
24 hours a day.
Absolutely.
Now, what about the LEED requirements? Now, do you guys help people stay compliant with that, or can you actually help them become LEED compliant?
We do. We have LEED approved, LEED type products, and it depends upon the building. If the building has, and we have buildings.
But before we get too deep into LEED, can you explain what LEED is?
Yes, Leadership Engineering Energy Design, and that is it's an acronym, but the beauty of it is it allows for, and I'll put it to you in simple terms, it is a good housekeeping seal of approval for a business to keep it environmentally friendly and to utilize the natural lighting, the tinted windows to allow for indirect sun to come in, but at the same time not negatively impact the temperature in the rooms and things of that nature.
Right, and that's the new kind of gold standard of the...
But can you retrofit a building for this, or this has got to start from the ground up?
Oh, no, you can retrofit.
Yeah. Right.
The best, the most cost-effective way is to build a building and have that building be LEED, if you will, approved or LEED certified at a... lower level or a more stringent level.
You could have like a LEED like.
A faux LEED.
So this is not as green oriented as it is sanitation oriented, or maybe it's in the same bucket, but I have a product for your product line if you don't have it already.
Okay.
And it's at our favorite breakfast place, Egg Harbor Cafe. In the washroom there, they have a little gizmo at the bottom of the door so that you can open the door with your foot.
Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Yeah, so you're well aware of this.
I am.
Isn't that cool?
Well, short of that investment, having a trash receptacle right by the door so that when you take a paper towel, number one, people like paper towels. They don't like the dryers because then all of a sudden you're touching something, and you really don't want to touch anything in a washroom.
Right.
So you take your paper towel, you grab the handle, you hold it with your foot, and then you put deposit the paper towel in.
So
the,
there's technique
in
involved.
In the receptacle.
It's like a little dance you're doing here.
but those devices are coming to light. As a matter of fact, there are some in facilities that now in gender specific areas you have toilet seats that will actually come up automatically.
Wow!
If you want that type of thing.
So, can I ask a question?
Sure, Liz.
Do you provide services just strictly like helping a company be more LEED compliant, even if you're not the one delivering the services, the light bulbs, whatever? Is that a service you have?
A great question. We prefer to not only do the site needs analysis, but also to supply the solution for the client. But we can, and in some cases, do provide just the consulting. But most of the companies, once they see how we do what we do, they want us to implement as well.
Great.
But great question. Thank you.
On John's business card, there are 11 bullet points. certifications or lapel pins or something. I don't know. These are all, but they must be very important in your line of work.
Well, they are. And thank you for noticing. And we put those on the front. As a matter of fact, one of our
vice... Because you only deal with young people. I can't see this.
Well, there are so many certifications. One of the things that one of our vice presidents said, you know, we have so many certifications. As opposed to putting it on the back, why don't you put them on the front? Great idea. So we put all of our National Minority Supplier Development Council certifications on the front, our Department of Transportation, a lot of great certifications, and these are like good housekeeping seals of approval, as well as hub zone. We were in a historically underutilized business zone, and that is a big area for economic development that all the bipartisan politicians are talking about helping small business. Well, guess what? We're it. Help us, you know, and that's where the hub zone comes into play, because there's a significant amount of business development to help bring businesses. We were actually located in Alpharetta, and we relocated and moved our business to this hub zone inside the city of Atlanta limits for strategic business development reasons.
But where is it located?
It's in Chamblee, which is not far from the old Doraville plant.
Right.
We moved in and next to PDK Airport, not that I own a jet or anything.
Not yet. But now that your three businesses are together, the sky's the limit now.
But we're right. I mean, we were literally on the runway, next to the runway of PDK Airport. But the beauty of that is that we are able to hire people from a economically challenged area, and we're also able to help that area grow. It's in DeKalb County.
Right.
DeKalb County has been very good for small business as well.
So have you got this hiring thing figured out? Because we don't. talk to us a little bit about, especially coming through a merger like you have, how do you go about recruiting, and how do you go about hiring and then sustaining the kind of culture that you want going forward?
Well, it's one of the major areas for us right now is getting industry specific expertise in our line of work, and that really sounds high tech, and we're a very low tech business, by the way, with high tech ideas. But one of the things that we try to do is to look for quality people. We have E-Verify, which is a very important recruiting type of a threshold to ensure that the employees have gone through immigration checks, going through criminal background, things of that nature, to make sure that we're hiring quality people for our clients, because it's a reflection of our business. So it's actually very difficult finding high quality individuals that want to do the work that we're paying them to do, which is cleaning, but at the same time to add value and to own, if you will, an area. That is so important for us, to own the floors, to own the cubicles, you know, to have that sense of ownership and to be empowered to employ the best practices that we have
right.
in order to make that a reality.
Now that you have this merger in place, has the goals of your goals personally changed? Now that you have this kind of your added brain power to your organization, are you aiming higher? Are you aiming in different areas?
My goals have definitely changed. One of the things, I was actually serious to hear Frank and Linda's replies and remarks with regard to the technology, but it gives me a sense of encouragement to know that we're doing things pretty much the right way, because we have people answering the phones on the third ring. I mean, we physically have people there answering phones. Yes, you have to, if after hours you may hit, you know, some technology, but the bottom line is we like to return calls within 24 hours. We like to follow up. And then we have on-call service that if for some reason there's an issue at night at the janitorial building, there's a service at facilitysupplygroup.com email that's monitored 24/7, 365, or there's a phone you can actually call and actually speak to someone if there's an issue. Those are the types of things we feel are important in our service business to help clients win. If there's a spill or something like that, that becomes very, very different. So we want to make sure that we have those best practices in place. Hiring those individuals that have that skill set, that we can pick up a phone and call and say, hey, I know you just got home, but there's an issue. We need you back. That requires, and we pay for that. So it requires us to take, if you will, a different approach in our hiring to ensure that we have individuals that have the same type of vision that we have put in place of exceeding client expectations.
Right. Now, when you go to market, are you going to market through referrals or do you do trade shows? How do you get your clients?
100% of our business has been word of mouth. We have never advertised over the last 8 years. And last year, actually this year, the first 5 months of this year, we made our year.
Wow.
It's been a blessing. And we made the year based upon business referrals, and it's just been an awesome ride for the last 5 months, 6 months.
Now, are you looking to expand? Is your business here based in Atlanta or Southeast or the country now that you're merged, or are you going all over the world?
We're national right now. Mm-hmm. We were one of the kind of a unique kind of business model because of my background in global business development with a major consumer products company here. Kimberly Clark, great company. Still have retirement money there, by the way. So go KC, go GP. That's one of so all the Georgia Pacifics and the Kimberly Clark. We love you guys. But one of the things that we wanted to do is to make sure that I use the business development context that I had. So we went national first. Up until last year, 95% of our business was outside the state of Georgia.
Wow.
And which put a lot of strain on us in terms of just managing the dynamics. But the blessing was that we had that business, and our contracts are 3 to 5 years in duration. So we did not have a lot of turnover. And then this year, with the new expansion of International Terminal, we were able to bring a significant amount of business to our portfolio from the new International Terminal.
Wow.
What a great story. And you've made the investment in your people so that you can have a distinct competitive advantage in the marketplace, it sounds like.
Well, we hope so. We like to keep them. We don't like to have to retrain and rehire.
Because that can get really expensive in a
hurry.
Very
expensive, absolutely.
Looks to me like you have all the promise of a Gulfstream kind of year, man.
Well, you know what? I'll receive that vision. That's
Look, it's not a coincidence you're right next to the airport.
That's right.
No coincidences.
We've been blessed, so thank you for that.
What's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more and maybe have a conversation with you about this?
Well, as soon as we get our preferredbuildingservice.com website, but until then, you can reach us at, reach me at Jay Fowler, FOWLER, @facilitysupplygroup.com. Again, Jay Fowler at FacilitySupplyGroup.com. Feel free to call us at 770-475-4577. Website is www.FacilitySupplyGroup.com.
Fantastic. Go ahead. You were about to say something else?
Yeah, and eventually we're going to get preferredservicegroup.com, preferredservicegroup.com website up and running, and it will all be tied in together.
And just smooth as glass. I just know it's going to happen for you. That's great. Thanks so much for coming in and visiting with us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blessing. Sir. Thank you.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guests this morning, Linda Hughes, Frank Paterno, John Fowler, and all of our friends here in the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.